we had issues at the World Cup where there was a big blunder in terms of we ran out of budget, and Sri Lanka cricket said you had to there's a tight leash on budget for even the Australian series, and you didn't know what to do. What exactly happens there? Why exactly do we keep hearing that there are issues?
Why exactly do we keep hearing about the issues in Sri Lankan cricket right now? Any specific issue? Is it the World Cup?
Let's talk about the World Cup. Why was there an issue with the budget? Why did it spiral out of control? Why did Sri Lanka cricket have to end up in debt?
Well, the only official explanation Sri Lanka cricket has given is that there were budget overruns. So the committee that was in charge of organizing and taking care of this event, co-hosting the World Cup, couldn't work within a budget. So only those individuals and their expense reports can point us to what exactly took place. I mean, I don't know if there has been any investigation or inquiry initiated into why we were $69 million in debt after the World Cup. I mean, it's something that most cricket boards would have wanted to know. What happened? Where did the money go? How did we budget so little when we needed so much more? So these things, only qualified personnel can audit these things and come up with a conclusion. But as an outsider and as a cricket fan, all I can see is incompetence. If you have people who are unable to do that job, regardless of if they played cricket for Sri Lanka or not, or who they're connected to, that job's not going to get done. So, in my opinion, you need people who have a proven track record. I mean, we have this opinion, I mean, most people have this opinion that former cricketers should get into governance of sports. I mean, just because you're a cricketer or a sportsman, that doesn't mean you necessarily have the knowledge, the skill to be a manager or an administrator. I mean, there are people who actually go to school to learn to be who learn people management skills, and they acquire this knowledge, and you can't expect an athlete or a sports person who excels on the field, no matter how many years he's played for Sri Lanka, to be able to manage a project or work within a budget. I mean, that's where I always it always baffles me. I mean, you have people who played cricket for Sri Lanka being appointed CEO when his qualifications might not even get him a job as a bank teller. So you've got to have people who are qualified to do the job. And this is where administration in cricket generally suffers in Sri Lanka, because you have people with connections, or you have people with a reputation as a good athlete trying to do something that he doesn't have the skills for.
I agree totally. Let's also talk about the other angle. I mean, we also get to hear a lot about the government's involvement in the selection matters, and there were stories during the rounds that Jayasurya finally got picked to bid adieu in a one-off game in England only because of his political connections, and so on and so forth. I mean, isn't that a problem as well? We've spoken about cricketers not necessarily being good enough to be administrators. How can government personnel decide or dictate, say, on selection policies?
Yeah, Sangakkara touched on that in his Cowdery lecture as well. He said, the selectors who have been appointed to pick a Sri Lankan team have to get final approval from a politician who is the sports minister. Now, the sports minister may be qualified to be a politician, but he has the final say on the 11 players or the squad representing Sri Lanka. So if you have a sports minister who cooperates with the selectors and does everything, and who trusts that the selectors can make those decisions, which is why they're there, then the sports minister would approve it. But that power in the hands of somebody who doesn't agree with the selectors will only make Sri Lanka cricket suffer further, right? So why would you need a group of selectors if another individual has the final say in the selection? I mean, what does the opinions of all the selectors and the captain matter if somebody says, hey, take this person out, I want this person in? So that's just open to abuse. And that's not a system that should be encouraged by anyone, which is why Sangakkara highlighted it. And it's an issue that lays in the Sports Act, and where the sports minister has the final authority on the selection of any team representing Sri Lanka, not just cricket. So I think all other sports bodies also have to take issue with this, and some change has to happen. But it has to be, in the end, the captain, the coach, the selectors who decide on what team they're playing. And as for Jayasurya, I don't know the situation surrounding why he was picked for one game, why he was able to come into the team after such a long hiatus. So what I can say is that if they gave him an opportunity to retire gracefully, then that's fine. He deserves that, because he's a cricketer who put Sri Lanka on the map. So I think for a great who has done so much for cricket, I think he deserves that opportunity to say, okay, that's it, I'm bidding you farewell. So if that was the case, that's fine. But because he's a politician and he's involved in the he's a politician from the ruling party, people will always say that there is a conflict of interest here, and the sports minister is also from the ruling party. So people can sense something wrong with that whole picture there. And I think that it's right to call for change with something like that. And selectors and the captain and the coach should decide. I'll take it a step further. I think that the captain and the coach should always be a part of the selection panel. They should be members of the selection.
But there's also another story doing the rounds. I'm not too sure how funny it is for people back in Sri Lanka. But, you know, there was an arrest warrant issued against Arjuna Ranatunga, and they say that was only because he was in the opposition party. I don't know, but that I think one of the main reasons where we talk about fairness to, you know, Sanath Jayasurya being such a legend, and he needed to be, if it was a genuine case wherein he wanted to retire gracefully, he needed to be given that opportunity. But these are things that are never come out in the open, either through players, say on their autobiographies, or even on an exclusive interview when they come out in the open and say, hey, this is what has happened. I think that is where the fans get left out, or they get the feeling that, you know, they don't get to see the real picture, and you always are open for speculation, and the stories take a different spin every 2 months, or every time somebody wants to take a dig at the person, they always go back to that. I think it's a very common thing all over the subcontinent. If whatever Hasan Tilakratne claimed will ever come out to light, he claimed that, you know, match fixing is rife in Sri Lankan cricket from whenever that he started playing in 90s or whatever. We've not heard of it at all. I mean, after that, it did a couple of rounds. It has died down. It has left, at least from to a person sitting here in India, I've not heard anything beyond that. So, two things here. It causes these issues. And what I would like to know from you here is, I mean, what is the latest on this? Are we going to get to know about more about this, or has he spoken to a tribunal or a jury, and they are validating what he's saying, and if there is going to be a formal announcement made on what their findings are on what he is claiming to be?
Well, the ICC's usual stance is that they won't make an official comment on an ongoing investigation. So the anti-corruption and what is it, ACSU?
Yeah.
So they will never comment, or they will never acknowledge that they met with Hasan Tilakaratne. And the last he said was he was willing to speak with them. And we heard the Sri Lankan sports minister say that the ICC team was in Sri Lanka. This was quoted in a Sri Lankan newspaper, by the way.
Okay.
He said that the ICC team had been in Sri Lanka. and they couldn't contact Hashan Tilakaratna on his phone. But then Tilakaratna responded shortly after saying that his phone was switched on and no one called him. That's the last. There's nothing else that's come out of it. So we can only assume that the ICC has tuned into this and they've sent a team to meet with Hashan Tilakaratna. And if that is the case, it's not going to be in the public spotlight anymore. So the ICC will always keep it under wraps, and unless it leaks out to the media, we won't hear anything further. So not heard anything apart from that, Gautam.
Okay, fine. I think let's get back to talking some cricket here. Let's start with, you know, the series that is ongoing currently. Australia seems to be doing really well, and there are now issues. I don't know how you see it from your end, but it's quite apparent that, you know, since Muralidharan has retired, Sri Lanka has not won a test game. Is it a fair reflection to say that no Muralidharan, you can't win test matches? Or is it because you also don't have Malinga playing test match cricket anymore? Maybe Dilara Fernando is not fit enough to play. There's no more Chaminda Vaz. I know it is a transitionary phase for Sri Lankan cricket, more from the bowling perspective. But is it fair to say that no Muthiah Muralidharan, no Malinga, you can't take 20 wickets, even if it means you're playing in home conditions?
Well, my focus has been more than winning test matches, losing test matches and series. So in recent losses, what's been reflective of recent losses is that our batsmen have lost the game for us. We have a selection policy that plays seven batsmen most of the time, and those seven batsmen have been shot out for less than 200 in recent occasions. So, and I mean, if you combine ODI stats too, you'll see that the batting has been up and down. I mean, there's no consistency in the batting. So even in this recent Australia series, what I notice is that before we can even ponder on winning, we're always on the back foot. How are we going to lose this game is what I'm looking at. And what's been evident in this series is that our batsmen have been losing the matches for us. When you give your bowlers enough to bowl at, I'm sure this attack can take 20 wickets. When they don't stand any chance from day one, I mean, being shut out for 105 and then 174, I believe, recently.
174, yeah.
Yeah, 174 against Australia. You see that the bowlers are always on the back foot, and you can't expect them to do much. Sure, Murali and Malinga, or the lack of Murali and Malinga in the side is a huge problem, and there is a big void there, but really, like, you can't expect the side to be competitive if they don't give their bowlers anything to work with. So big totals have always been a part of India's success too. So you'd think that if our batsmen can get their game together and put up big totals regularly, you won't feel Murali's absence or Malinga's absence as much.
I think it is one of the things that, you know, is haunting Indian cricket. The reasons why our batting is not able to put enough runs on the board, kind of a thing. But also, now looking at it, say, from a batting perspective, Hilal, you have these stalwarts of the Sri Lankan batting, Sangakkara, Jayawardena, Thillan Samarivira, Dilshan, all in their mid-30s and probably all aging together. Sooner or later, you're going to get into a state where Indian cricket is finding itself right now. Older set of people, it becomes a liability on the field, even though they are your best players. How do you see Sri Lankan selectors and the captains? Do you have a vision in place? There's not even a coach, a permanent coach right now. Is there a vision in place how you want to face the set of people out? And more importantly, do you have the replacements ready? I've seen briefly a little bit of Paranavitana, or I really like the temperament of, you know, Angelo Matthews, though maybe he's still not very consistent yet at the test level. and Chandimal. Are these guys ready to take over from Sangakkara's, Jayavarna's, Samaravira's, Dilshan's in say 2, 3, 4 years' time?
Well, Sangakkara, Mahela, and all the greats in the team are where they are now because they had the opportunity to be able to play regularly in the side and play years of cricket, right? They developed over time, right, to where they are. I don't know if the next generation of Sri Lankan cricketers are getting that same opportunity. I mean, like you said, this current batch of batsmen all retire and they will retire in a very close period of time because they're all around the same age group, right? So with that in mind, we should be doing more to or we should have an organized rotation policy where we give everybody a fair go regardless of how well you've done. I mean, it's far-fetched to think something like that will transpire, but in order for these guys to be prepared, say even for the 2015 World Cup, you know that Sanga, Mahela and Tilakaratna Dilshan won't be around when 2015 comes around and World Cup is in Australia, right? Australia, New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
We know that the next generation of batsmen Sri Lanka has to have ready for that tournament need to be given a chance this year, next year, and the year after. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of time. So if they don't get that opportunity, I don't know how you can expect them to be ready in 2 or 3 years. That's my only concern. So tough decisions have to be made. We can't drag careers on like we did Sanath Jayasuriya's. And then when he fails towards the end of his career, we blamed him and we say it's time for him to go. But the selectors share much of that blame. They let him play for that long and they relied on him. Sri Lanka relied on him even past his 35th birthday. So similarly, we can't make that same mistake again. We probably need to give these guys more opportunities, and that usually entails making tough decisions. You have to be able to tell a player, this is especially senior players, this is what we have in store for you, and this is when we expect you to retire gracefully. When you have a time frame, especially with your seniors, and you have an idea of how long they're going to be playing, you can work on introducing youth into the side. When things are indefinite and not spoken about, there's really no method there. So I think that tough decisions have to be made, and that would entail dropping seniors occasionally to give the youngsters a chance.
I see that happening perhaps in one-day cricket. I think it's traditionally not seen to be the right thing to do in Test match cricket. It somehow seems to be a problem in terms of you know, facilitating the next set of people with the opportunities at the test level, because none of the top cricketers really want to rest. Maybe it'll happen in one day cricket. We've definitely seen the first set of steps that'll come from at least the senior players. Jayavardhana stepped down when he thought, you know, his shelf life was up, and Sangakkara stepped down right after the World Cup. Now you see you know, a 35-year-old somewhere about there, Dilshan being the captain of Sri Lanka. A bizarre statement from Sri Lanka cricket saying that it's been extended till the end of this year, when probably they'll be in the middle of a tour in South Africa. How do you see two things here? How do you see Dilshan as a captain? And I also saw an article wherein you were critical of his approach to the batting, even when, you know, not just his approach to batting, but also some of the responses that came for some of the short selections that he's been making of late.
Yeah, Dilshan's captaincy and Dilshan's batting slump now, to me, are two different topics. He makes a good captain. He has the experience. He has a brash attitude that you saw in early Ricky Ponting. you know, that attitude, the cockiness, all essential for a good captain. You know, you have to be able to give it back just as you receive it. But the focus is on his captaincy now because Sri Lanka is losing. And that's slightly unfair. He should be given a fair opportunity. And the fact that Sri Lanka Cricket announced that they will retain him as captain till December 31st shows more the incompetence of Sri Lanka's media unit. Perhaps what they are trying to say is that they hope to give him a run till end of this year, or maybe something along those lines. But why they chose December 31st in the middle of a tour, no one knows. I mean, it just highlights incompetence. That's all that does. But as a batsman, I think I wrote in 2010 about his transformation from a middle order player who was struggling to get into the side regularly, from that to an opening batsman who was scoring centuries, and he's boosted his test average to over 40. All that is there was an evident change in his game. He was dropped from the side. They cited the same reasons: inconsistent, he was reckless. These are the same criticisms that he faces now, right? And the naysayers say that, you know, he doesn't have any response, he's not taking responsibility as a captain, as a senior batsman in the side. And these were the same mistakes that got him kicked out of the side before he was elevated to open the batting. The change that I noticed from that period and from when he came back into the side and experienced all this success after was that he had a different approach to batting. Even in his 193 that he scored at Lords, he scored 193 runs at Lords in England, against England during the recent series, right? And in his 193 at Lords, he played out maidens. He played out maidens for several overs. He was cautious. You'd expect that degree of caution in England against the moving ball on a seeming track. But in Dilshan's case, that kind of caution on all wickets against all bowling attacks is essential, because throwing his wicket away is what people see from the outside when he gets out in such reckless fashion. I mean, in the first test, I think I wrote that he hit Copeland, I think, if I'm not mistaken, for a four. And then very next ball, he got caught in the covers. Short cover by Ricky Ponting.
Yeah.
And everything about that shot showed that he wanted to blast the ball through Ponting and score another four and show the Australians that closing fielder didn't affect him. That kind of approach, maybe it'll work in T20s, but in Test cricket, he's just playing right into the hands of the opposition. So he needs to be a bit more smart. It's fine if he says, I'm not changing my game, I want to continue to be aggressive. No one's asking him not to be aggressive. But he needs to identify what brought him success, what brought him success in recent times. And I think he has forgotten. And it's human nature. Sometimes you forget the basics. So to get out there match after match and slam the first ball for four should not be your goal. Or to score 15 runs in the first over in a test match should not be your goal, because that's just working right in the hands of the opposition, you know. Any opening batsman, the odds are generally stacked against them. They're facing a new ball. They had no time to adjust to the conditions. They just got in. So generally, the odds are stacked against you. So he should be a little more circumspect in his approach.
We saw a little bit of that in the IPL as well. I saw most of the games here in Bangalore when he was there before he went off to England, and it looked as though he was trying to compete with Chris Gayle for a little while, and he was not as consistent as he was for the previous seasons of the IPL, wherein he was a real rock-solid player for Delhi Daredevils at the top of the order. Maybe it is one of those. Let's get back to, you know, another issue that is doing the rounds. not exactly an issue. We're talking about the coach. We've had two interim coaches post World Cup. The reports today suggest that Marsh was being offered a job of the Sri Lankan coach, and he confirmed that he was being approached by the Sri Lanka Cricket Board. Do we have a set of people that are identified for this, and why is it taking so long? We've had Law being the interim coach for the Tour of England. He went off. Now he's now in Bangladesh. Now Ramesh Ratnayake is the interim coach, and still looking for a full-time coach outside. I don't know how it works in Sri Lanka, but here in India of late is that we have this real fascination for foreign coaches. Is that one of the reasons why you don't maybe want to stick to Ramesh Ratnayake, or do you have a set of people that are identified who Sri Lanka cricket wants to approach and then nail down one?
Ramesh is actually employed by the Asian Cricket Council, ACC. So they've only released him for a short period until Sri Lanka finds a permanent coach. Sri Lanka has been without a coach since April, as you mentioned, right? Stuart Law since the England tour. So it's a worrying situation, not having a coach and not having a full-time coach. And I can't see why they wouldn't look into a local coach if they had somebody capable of doing the job. I don't know if there's anyone capable of doing that job right now, or if there's anyone who's capable that's interested in taking on the job. I know that, as you mentioned, Marsh, he spoke to Crick Info on an article today. Crick Info quoted him saying that all that happened was Sri Lanka cricketers approached him and asked him, spoken to him about taking on the role as coach or being, you know, joining Sri Lanka as coach. Nothing beyond that. There's been no formal discussion, he says. He says that, you know, he has not made any firm decision on it. So it boils down to the same situation that was before. We have nothing solid. There's no coach on the horizon for Sri Lanka at the moment. They've approached Tom Moody before, but as far as I can remember, Tom Moody turned it down too. So I'm not sure why people are turning it down, but it could well be due to the financial situation Sri Lanka cricket is in right now. But they're not in such a state where they can't afford to pay a coach's wages. I don't think so. But not anymore, at least. There was a time a few months ago, there was reports in the paper saying that they had to take a bank loan to pay staff salaries at SLC. So I don't think that situation is still there. I think they have funds to operate. But I don't know why people are you know, refusing the offer. It could not even be related. It could be Moody has other commitments, or maybe he just doesn't want to go back to a job that he has already done. He's looking for a job with Cricket Australia, or maybe have his own ambitions. But yeah, Marsh, there's nothing certain with Marsh. Paul Farbrace was shortlisted. He said he wasn't interested. Stuart Law had been pleading with the previous interim committee headed by Soma Chandra De Silva. In England, he said that he wanted to know what was happening to the future of his employment, because he was only employed as an interim coach. So, I mean, had we been more forthright with Stuart Law, we could have still retained him. But where it stands now is that they can't find anybody what is apparent to me is that they can't find anyone willing to take on the job right now.
Fine. Let's get to the last topic of discussion that I have in my agenda here is the T20 league that was supposed to start in Sri Lankan cricket this year. Do you really see that it happening next year with the proper funding coming through? And I mean, it was bizarre, the sequence of events. It at least looked as if it was a return favor for you know, letting Sri Lankan players stay back almost till the beginning of the tour of England by India to, you know, provide with sponsorship and allowing Indian cricketers to take part in the Sri Lankan Premier League T20. And there, all of a sudden, there were stories doing the rounds saying that Lalit Modi had connection with the league, and it died down. And I don't see that we went through the auction procedure or any such thing. How do you see that panning out next year?
There hasn't been much coming out of Sri Lanka cricket as in regards to their planning next year. The structure, the tournament, the entire thing is still managed by Somerset Entertainment Ventures. That's the Singapore company that BCCI had an issue with. So they're still obviously going to be the event management company in charge of this event. And this year it was cancelled this year because India refused to send their players for it. So the only thing that determines if it's going to take place next year would be the same thing that determined if it was going to take place this year. So if India, I mean, basically to me, what it sounds like is that the entire tournament is reliant on India. So, I mean, this is a local domestic tournament for the benefit of our players, but it's dependent on India. So I don't know if it's going to happen next year. India will know that. So it's hard to say. It's hard to say. Unless Sri Lanka cricket decides to hell with India, we're going to stick with, we don't care about the Indian TV audience that we'll be missing. Let's go ahead with the tournament. I mean, I can't see them cancelling indefinitely till they win over India. And mm-hmm. India, I don't see any of the issues that India raised, especially Somerset Entertainment Ventures is still involved in the tournament, and India had reservations about that. So I don't know how they'll work around that, and I don't know if there's been any effort since earlier this year to resolve this. And this is a busy year for Sri Lanka, so in regards to the FTP, so we'll be touring South Africa later this year. So SLC will also be pretty focused on our team and the tours that are coming up this year. So I don't know how much effort and time will be placed on this tournament and if it will even take place next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we wrap up, I would probably like to know just pry a little further on this T20 thing. We see that, you know, Australia's gone the T20 way. They've totally franchised their T20 structure. You don't have six state teams anymore. You have eight franchises playing, and we all know the kind of perception the entire world has about the IPL. Maybe people have different opinions about that. Are you worried that Sri Lanka might also opt to go that way next year? Or how do you see it in general? Say, for example, do you think the T20 way of domestic leagues is the best way to go about it? Or do you say that you just play the World Cup and you really don't care what else goes around, say, rest of the time? You're happy playing test match cricket in one day cricket.
Well, the reality is that T20 is here to stay. It's an accepted format in international cricket. More tours are now more than just one T20 game on a tour. They consist of two. And in the future, you'll see there's no doubt there's going to be as much as a five-match T20 series on a tour. Because the entire idea of the T20 concept was to create a shorter game to keep fans who don't like the other formats interested. So obviously those fans and that need is not going to go away. So T20 is here to stay. I have no problem with a cricket board monetizing a tournament and generating revenue like the IPL did. But what the IPL has done is it has effectively prevented other boards from being able to replicate them, which sometimes would appear as an unfair monopoly to most people. So if everyone has that same opportunity to, you know, have their own tournament like the IPL without having to deal with restrictions from boards, like now last year India had an issue with Somerset Entertainment Ventures. I mean, if they really wanted to be diplomatic about it, they could have worked around it and Sri Lanka would have had their first T20 league this year. So that didn't take place. Because Australia is not at all, or Australia's cricketers are not at all dependent on IPL or India like Sri Lanka's cricketers are, the Australian Cricket Board are able to call their own shots and organize a tournament. They have the funding. In Sri Lanka's case, they had marketed and they planned the event, or the tournament catering to Indian audiences, and they had expected much of the revenue to come from Indian TV audiences, and they neglected entirely Sri Lanka's local population. I mean, there was no advertising of the event. I mean, they planned to have the event this year. They should have. There was no brand awareness of the tournament even the year prior to it. So people, the fans were left in the dark because basically they thought there's no money to be made here in Sri Lanka. The money is in India. So when that cash cow disappeared, the tournament no longer seemed feasible, which should not be the way they should be thinking. So I have no objections. I actually, I'm a fan of the IPL. I watch it. The last season just got a little too much for me because I had watched two previous seasons of IPL and it became monotonous to me. So I'm sure others also see it like that. I mean, I have nothing against the IPL or any other T20 tournament anywhere in the world. I mean, if West Indies has a tournament tomorrow and Sri Lankans are playing, I will watch it. If West Indies has a tournament tomorrow and Indians are playing, you will watch it as well. So I mean, there's always going to be an audience for T20 cricket. Everyone follows their favorite cricketer, so it doesn't matter what league it is, they'll continue to watch that format and they'll continue to, embrace it. Administrators should look beyond, especially Sri Lankan administrators, should look beyond India when they plan tournaments such as this. I mean, there's 21 million people in Sri Lanka, and why forget that market, that audience?
Fair point. One other point here, Hilal, is that you see that England, Australia, and India being the biggest churners of these T20 cricket, and we are already seeing the effects of that, with especially with West Indies, where the people are asking for unconditional no objection certificates on their boards, which will effectively rule the choosing of player, say, club or country with the player. Is there a case wherein we might actually have, say, a Tilak Ratne Dilshan, who could still be the captain of Sri Lanka, but he might want to go and play in the Big Bash in Australia in, say, November or December, when you might effectively be preparing or playing a test match?
I don't see Sri Lanka cricket heading that way. I know that even the updated contracts that they're going to receive, the contracts future cricketers will sign, will have various clauses preventing them from choosing other leagues over Sri Lanka. And I can't see, I mean, I can't, even when Sri Lanka cricket issues the no objection certificate for players to play at the IPL, there has to be a clause there somewhere that says that commitments to Sri Lanka come before IPL. So if that player is picked in the squad, Sri Lanka comes first, and then any other tournament elsewhere comes after. So that's my view too, and I support that entirely, because you can't have you can't have international cricket suffering as a result of a private tournament. That doesn't augur well for cricket everywhere.
That seems to be the thing that people hold against the mushrooming of these various T20 leagues across the world. They're saying that, it effectively holds lesser cricket nations in term to ransom, because if you have a players association that is against the board, and they say they want to play these leagues, there's no stopping that. I see that as one of the major reasons wherein people across the world are worried about not just IPL now, with the BBL and whatever else that might mushroom. So we'll have to wait and see how that transpires. On that note, Hilal, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been quite a journey talking about the various things about Sri Lankan cricket, island cricket, and also the immediate future of Sri Lankan cricket. Thanks a lot. We hope to, have you back on the show sometime soon.
Thank you, Gautam. It was my pleasure.